The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The government will provide 14,000 new beds for asylum seekers through turnkey properties, empty offices and a process of rapid building. Figures released last week show that over 1,000 international protection applicants are currently without accommodation. Well, I'm joined on the line by the CEO of the Irish Refugee Council, Nick Henderson, and also joining us is Independent TD for Kerry, Michael Healy-Ray. Good morning and welcome to you both. Nick, we'll go to you first. This announcement by the government that there will be a total of 35,000 beds for asylum seekers by 2028. That's got to be good news from your point of view.
Yeah, I think no one can deny that there is a very, very urgent need to change the way that we are accommodating people seeking protection. There has been a huge near 100% reliance on emergency style accommodation that has significant problems for the individual and possibly the community and so forth. We know those. That's the story of the last couple of years. So this is a good news insofar as it sets out a strategy, but there's two caveats. One is that it will take 4 years, which is a long period of time. And two, we don't know that there is the funding yet available to implement this strategy. And then three, that it doesn't, we think, address the current problem of 1,500 people without accommodation, as you mentioned, Pat, but also the document very, very concerningly raises the prospect of women and children being homeless as well. It's buried within the document, but there's a clear statement.
Can you quote that little bit for us that indicates women and children might be on the streets?
Yes. Yeah, so they say in terms of their near-term strategy, so this is dealing with the current issue of people being homeless, they say there is increasing likelihood that families, including women and children, could find themselves without an offer of accommodation in the coming weeks or months.
Okay.
So that would be a situation where a woman or children arrive in the country, apply for international protection, and they just simply couldn't be accommodated. That should speak for itself. It's of huge concern. And we're frankly quite stunned and appalled that there isn't the all of government action that would be that should be required and that is needed to stop that becoming
a reality.
Now,
there are a couple of things, though, which indicate that the government is having a rethink on its approach to international protection. The minister is contemplating adding a number of other countries, eight other countries, to the safe countries list. In other words, they would not qualify for international protection if they came from those safe countries. And the other is the decision to embrace the EU-wide protocols, which would guarantee, for example, if someone had applied for asylum in another EU country, failed, and then came to us. Currently, we take them in. But under this protocol, which won't come into effect until January, I think, of 2026, under that protocol, we'd send them back to the country where they had failed to gain access.
But we do that already, and we have that power already. There's two particular powers that the Irish state has, one under what's called the Dublin Regulation. So if I pass through another EU member state, I was fingerprinted there, or I made an asylum application there, I can be returned there.
Hang on a second, because the Taoiseach outgoing said to us on this program, when I mentioned the Dublin Regulation to him, he said, that's gone.
No, the Dublin Regulation is it's a live instrument. That's wrong. It's an immediate power that the Irish state has. It also has what's called the inadmissibility procedure, where if I arrive in Ireland and I have refugee status from another country, my application can be deemed inadmissible and I don't go any further. So those powers exist already. In relation to the safe country of origin designation, it doesn't mean that if I come from a safe country that I cannot be a refugee. I can still be a refugee. And indeed, 10 to 12% of cases currently that are from safe countries are successful. It means, in effect, that my case is accelerated. And also, I have an appeal that is not in person. I'd appeal on the papers only. I saw that statement about adding countries to the list. I was slightly surprised by it because already two countries were added at the beginning of this year. And there seemed to be recognition that further countries couldn't be added, but that may change. But it's important that those two points.
Nick, you may be aware of the situation in Britain, the scandalous case of a child abuser from Afghanistan who converted to Christianity, which appears to have been bogus. The man is now dead and can't answer for himself. But it turned out that churches vouched for him and he got asylum and then went on to commit an appalling crime in Britain. And I think that is probably what people are concerned about, that maybe we're being caught up to the eyeballs by some of the people who are, you know, maybe economic refugees or economic migrants who could properly apply for jobs under our visa program.
Well, there's a lot in that question, Pat. Yeah. I saw that case. It's an appalling case. But I worked in the UK in asylum law, and I would have had people who have said that they are converting to Christianity and asked for churches to testify on their behalf. And that was a very rigorous process. The person would have had to have demonstrated that they are a person of faith, that they're attending church, that they have knowledge of the Bible and so forth. So it's not as if this is something that's issued by the church easily or quickly. In terms of the people coming here, in terms of that point around economic migrants, we're working here with people who are coming to Ireland because they're fleeing persecution and war. There are devices, as I say, within the Irish state's power to consider an application that they think isn't going to be successful. They have the Dublin regulation, they have the admissibility regulation, they can accelerate cases. It's not that the state is without power to control cases and applications that come here.
You see, what is concerning is that you've got a limited amount of accommodation, which, as you say, perhaps by a whole of government approach might be increased. But for everyone who's here under false pretenses, it means there's no bed for someone who desperately needs a bed. Those women and children that you've been adverting to who may end up on the streets. If you've got people sitting comfortably in beds who should not be here, they're occupying the space that might be taken by those who desperately need to be here.
But surely that suggests that people, your use of the phrase false pretense, from our perspective, there shouldn't and can't be some such a thing. The person has put forward their application for protection. It's a fundamental right to make an application for asylum. There is a very rigorous process that will consider it. And if that person is unsuccessful, then they would be asked to leave that accommodation and are being asked to leave. And the support that they get would cease.
Would they be asked to leave the country?
They would, yeah, they would. They would receive a deportation order that would state that they have a period of time to leave the country. And after that, they can be deported. We've spoken, I think, Pat, before about the state's deportation process. It basically ground to a halt during COVID, and it hasn't increased much since then, but that would be reflective of the same situation in other countries. And there's very few people with deportation orders still in the system. You are, as I say, you are asked to leave accommodation, the daily expenses allowance that you receive would end. If you had permission to work, that would end also. You'd be required to report to the Gardaí on your location. So it's people are treated in a very particular way if they have a deportation order.
Currently, there are 28,181 beds in the system. Of those, 6,173 beds are in permanent IPAS centres, some 1,184 state-owned beds, and the rest are in emergency commercial accommodation. But the target by 2028 is for a further 7,000 or so extra places, and presumably people will be coming and going, people will be either rejected or accepted. If they're accepted, they get to work, they get to move into the regular economy. Do you think that 35,000 is an appropriate target for accommodation by 2028?
I think it is an appropriate target and bearing in mind that one of the reasons why this plan has been necessary is previous targets were too low. There was an expectation of 3,000 people applying for protection each year. That was before COVID, and it's not realistic. There's an increase in people seeking protection across Europe, and we are also seeing that. So I think it is sufficiently ambitious in number. The concern that we would have is, one, when will it start? When will this plan begin to be implemented? It's been much vaunted, and we've been waiting it for a period of time. Two, has the Department of Public Expenditure given the budget for this plan to be implemented?
It does seem, though, to be ambitious in the sense that Rapid Bill, now Rapid is not, you know, Bill put down foundations today, finish tomorrow. It could be a matter of months, but it can be done in months, Rapid Build. And then the use of empty commercial premises and some HSE facilities which are available, that does suggest an acceleration of effort.
Yeah, and that those three things, as far as I understand it, Pat, are relating to what they're describing as the near-term strategy. That's the strategy to deal with the current issue, the current demand, and the very serious crisis of 1,500 people being without accommodation, and also the prospect of women and children being without accommodation. So the states say that they would convert commercial properties with a focus on empty office blocks, and that they would acquire HSC in state lands, and they would build prefabs on that land. That may be the desire, but we would have concerns. One is that the use of commercial properties is subject to the vagaries of the commercial property market, which can go up. It seems to be on the down at the moment, but it could go back up again. Two, it would take time to acquire those lands and put prefabs on them. And then three, when will this start? Because at the moment...
But how else do you think they can magic up accommodation? I mean, you're quite right in saying 1,500 people on the streets is scandalous and shocking and unacceptable. But where do you get the accommodation from overnight?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a fair point. We wrote to the government in December, and when this second crisis of homelessness began, there was homelessness in the spring as well, and we gave them recommendations about using capacity that exists within the system. We do believe that existing capacity within the IPAS system. We also recommended the use of accommodation that's currently being used for refugees from Ukraine. The number of refugees from Ukraine in that type of accommodation is decreasing week by week. We also recommended the use of other state property. But there's an important nuance here: is they're saying that they would build on state land as opposed to actually using state facilities and buildings to accommodate people. That may be imperfect. That type of accommodation may be imperfect. But it would at
it's
least
a roof
take
over your head. It's a roof
exactly,
over your head,
yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah. Nick, thank you very much for joining us. Nick Henderson is the CEO of the Irish Refugee Council. Michael Healy-Ray is listening to that conversation. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Pat, to you and your listeners.
So what do you make of the government's new plan? A total of 35,000 places will be available. People hopefully will not be permanently in these accommodations. They will be either, you know, sent home or sent out of the country if they're rejected, or they'll be accepted, process quickly, get into the regular economy and fend for themselves.
Yes, I've studied the plan very late last night, and If people around the country are reading this, listening to it, and even if they don't read the whole report, it's not that long, but the one thing that they would actually be doing afterwards is scratching their heads, and they would be saying, why cannot we do this for the 13,000 homeless Irish people who are on our system and who we cannot source accommodation for? And I'm not coming on your radio program to pitch one against the other or to be divisive. I want to be inclusive, and I want to ensure that there's a thing called fair play and balance for everybody.
But Michael, don't forget that when you're looking at an Irish family, say two parents and a couple of kids who are currently in a hotel, they are not looking for tented accommodation in Crooksling or dormitory accommodation in some HSE facility. They're looking for a house or an apartment. And whereas the emergency people coming in, you know, anything with a solid roof over your head is better than a tent.
But one of the things that the department have said, and I'm not being critical of the department, what I'm saying is the department have said they will build, for instance, modular accommodation on state-owned land. Why can we not say to people that are homeless Irish people now, we will build modular homes for you on state homeland? We have 4,000 housing applicants, for example, in County Kerry. Some of these have been waiting 8, 12, 13. I had a person the other day, 15 years on a list, hopelessly waiting to be given a local authority accommodation. why not say to that person, we will build a modular home on state-owned land. God knows we have enough of it. And this is why people are getting angry. And I'm not one of these people now who was running in front of people or insulting them or shouting in that type of way. That's not the way to do business. That's not the way to get places. But I think that the whole new report that has come out, it will actually highlight the difference in the way we're dealing with accommodation. Because whether it's accommodation for a person coming from Ukraine or whether it's looking for accommodation for a taxpayer who's been living here for the last 10 years on a housing list, 10 years waiting, whether it's in Killarney or any other part of Kerry. And when they hear, well, the state are now going building accommodation, long-term accommodation, because this is not tented accommodation. This is modular homes, rapid build, which sometimes, Pat, rapid build isn't exactly a solution either. It mightn't be as rapid as you might like to think.
Yeah, but it's quick enough. I saw some modular homes built in Sligo, I think by the Sisk company, and they were terrific, built very quickly, built to a high standard, but they were rapid build. And so I know it's possible. But the question is it not the local authority's job to house its local people? And they need to get the finger out. They need to lobby central government for the funds. They need to source the lands locally. Because Dara O'Brien, for all his talents, can't be expected to micromanage every county council area in the country.
Yes, but for instance, our local authority in Kerry County Council, I'll defend them forever, quite simply because it's like the fishes and the loaves. They do the very best they can every day. And we don't have people sleeping rough, thankfully, in County Kerry. Thanks to Kerry County Council. Thanks to the homeless unit. Thanks to the Director of Services, who makes the most out of the resources they get from central government. But if, for example, central government were to say to Kerry County Council, we're going to give you state-owned land, which we have in County Kerry, and we're going to give you the resources to build modular homes, rapid-built homes, Kerry County Council would build them as quick as anyone else in any other part of Europe.
But has Kerry County Council made any proposal in that regard to central government? I mean, during the week we were talking to the Minister for Sport about playing field for Dublin 8, and he was pointing the finger at Dublin City Council saying, you know, they've got to apply for the money. The money is there. They've got to make the application and can't give any guarantees, but between the lines, the money will be forthcoming. Well, so doesn't the council have to say, look, this is what we want to do. These are how many families we can house. This is the area in which we have services and so on, water and sewage and all the rest of it. This is what we want to do. Now give us the money.
Yes, but there is no actual, of all the councils you could use it as an example, Kerry County Council would probably be the most proactive local authority when it comes to development. If they are continuously making plans, proposals, and trying to, the local authority members are trying to zone land for building, and always they're trying to prepare and plan ahead. But they need the resources to be given.
Now, Michael, you were obviously on the council before you became a TD, and you know you've extended probably friends and family in the council. What lands, state-owned lands, do you see in Kerry that the government could put at the disposal of the council to build these rapid-built homes?
There are plenty locations that we have. We have them in towns, out of towns.
No, but which ones? I mean, name and shame, if you like. You know, at the particular lands that you say, we could have a mini village of, you know, 40 families in this location. It's serviced, there's power, there's water, there's sewage, it's ready to go.
Yes, the local authority in itself would actually have lands that are available to it. They would have land in that the state owns that wouldn't be under the direct control of Kerry County Council. But if the government were kind enough to say, yes, you can have
but
that.
But I'm asking you just to give us an example, because this could be a template for other counties. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give an example. But there's land that's right in the heart of Tralee in Ballymullen that would be under the ownership of the state. And the state could say to Kerry County Council, we'll give that over to you, we'll build modular homes there, and you can accommodate some of the housing list.
And what's there at the moment, Michael? What is there that would have to be displaced?
There's an army barracks now, which is actually being used to house Ukrainians. But my point is, the government in this plan, they're also talking about converting commercial property for Ukrainian use. Why did the government not ever say, we will convert commercial accommodation that they own or that they control, or it could be owned by agencies of the state, such as the HSE and other organizations like that? Why is it that we have two rules? I know we have our international obligations, but remember, when you talk about international obligations, nobody can say, Pat, that we haven't done our part. We've opened up, we've housed people, we've educated people. From a healthcare point of view, we're doing everything we can. But maybe it comes to the stage that you have to actually say, we can't accommodate anymore.
All right, Michael, thank you very much for joining us. Michael Healy-Ray, Independent Kerry TD.
Your chance to win big. News Talk's Cash Machine.
Now, somebody missed out on
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.